I'm also excited to introduce the guy who's speaking today, a guy by the name of Chris C. Chris is from Houston, Texas. We won't hold that against him. But Chris and his wife are church planters down there. They started a community in Houston in an urban area. Chris has lived it out. He was in the building when they were renovating it, living there. He's experienced all the joys and frustrations of living in a community like that, including being robbed multiple times. And I think Chris has something to say to us today to really wrap up this series as we explore Jesus, the greatest show on earth. So help me welcome Chris to the stage.
Well, Crossroads, I'm fired up to be with you today. I'm so fired up that I'm even going to put my mic on now. There's so many of these services, you got to take it off so your ear doesn't get bent over the course of the weekend. I'm a fan of your pastor. I think the world of him, and I feel like getting to be with you today is an introduction in some ways into your family and into the exciting things that all of you are doing. Just a little bit about me. I am from Houston. Few things I love. I love my family. I got a wife and four kids. I love good food. I love red wines, especially Argentine Malbecs, if anybody's inviting me over. There are only a few things I hate in the world. I hate the Chicago Cubs. I do. I despise them. If you're a Cubs fan, then let's be honest, we're not really sure you're a Christian. So I don't know. Again, it's more than being a sports fan. If you're a Cubs fan, there are pretty clear definitions of what define a cult, right? And so there are groups that have rituals that involve goats. That would tend to be a criteria and kind of a blind loyalty no matter what. And so we're going to have a prayer service for those of you that fall into that category afterwards. I'm especially excited to be here and close out this series because I think it's a really important one. And especially to close it out because I really believe that this greatest show on earth, this experience that is Jesus, that it lives on in each of us. That we literally, the scriptures say, we get to be the hands and feet of Jesus that continue the show. In fact, Jesus himself said that those that follow me, that come after me, will do even greater things than I did. Can you imagine that? I mean, Jesus did some pretty remarkable things. And I don't think he was just saying that just for fun or exaggerating. I think it's really true. And so we're going to ponder today, what does that look like for us to be a part of something really big, something really significant in the world? I come as a person, I study the scriptures regularly. I get to teach them. I lead a Bible translation project. That means over the last 7-8 years, I've spent every day working with language scholars, translating the Bible, working with scholars and great poets and writers, a translation called The Voice. And I'll read to you from it today. But every day I'm studying the Bible and I still come to you with a lot more questions than I have answers. I haven't figured it all out. In fact, if you are that person that you've got it figured out, anybody know that kind of Christian that they read the Bible so they can argue with you, right? So when they're reading it, they're thinking, this is gonna be really good in my next argument about faith. If you're that person, I hate to tell you, but nobody likes you. Your mother doesn't like you. She prays you won't come home for Christmas. God didn't give us the Bible to argue over, right? It's a message of God's love and grace. And when we read it well, it humbles us. It draws us nearer to God. And that's very much what we hope for today. I come to you with a lot of questions today, but I also come with some answers. And the things we're talking about in this series are the things in my life that I am most sure of. The things I'd hang my hat on and I'd say, I believe with all my being and everything I've experienced that these things are true. And I hope that many of us get to live in that place. I hope you will join with me in saying, you know, I think I agree with you on some of those things, or I'm at least willing to explore those things on this path. Jesus, as he would teach in a tradition of the prophets, and the prophets would get up and they'd often do and teach kind of almost crazy things that would make you pause and you'd have to think. When Jesus taught, everybody was often a little confused, but they had to ponder what he was teaching. Walter Brueggemann, a great Old Testament theologian, says, when the prophets would teach and do their prophetic acts and signs, that it would cause everyone to pause, because he would simultaneously, the prophets, would paint a picture of the world as it is and the world as it should be, and make us go, wait, what am I doing? Why do I live this way? Why do I spend my money the way I spend it? Am I living into somebody else's expectations or mine? And I'm hoping today you have a little bit of that experience. I was driving back from preaching at a church in Austin, and Texas is really big, so we have all kinds of different terrain. Some people in Texas think we're like our own nation, and our governor even talks about seceding sometimes. But now he wants to run for president, so it'll be a little different. But he won't talk about that as much anymore. But I was driving back from Austin through the hill country, and the hills in that part of near Austin are really different. In Houston, it's really flat, so it's strange to see actual curves in the land when you're driving, for me. And so I get to the top of one of these hills, and I all of a sudden see there are 12 deer standing in the road just right in front of me. Only because of the superior Korean engineering of my Kia do I manage to slam on the brakes and stop in time without hitting these guys. And we have this really awkward moment where I'm staring at them and they're staring at me, and we're going, who doesn't belong here, you know? And finally they figure out, like, this isn't the place for us to be. We should go on down the road. And that's the kind of moment I'm hoping you have, that today you look at your life and say, you know, there's some things that got me to this place, and they're not the things I really believe or that I want to believe going forward. And I need to head into some new ground, into some new territory, into some place that I find a new sense of safety and purpose and meaning in life. I had one of those pause moments that made me think in a place that our church has gotten to do work drilling water wells that we've been blessed to be able to fund at Christmas time. And in Liberia, some very extreme and rural communities where they were needing clean water. And I wanted to show you just a little bit of this experience. This is the chief in a village. They've been drinking from this muddy hole. And for all of the history of that village, people have been getting cholera consistently. Young children will get diarrhea and within days often die. And as we began to drill this water well, the first in the region, we got to do about 30 more after this first one. Everything changed in this place. So these people, the church, experienced this tremendous renewal. People, they could talk about the love of God in a way that made sense with clean water. People were healthy and well, and it was a really exciting visit. And while we were there, one of the guys we encountered is this guy named Winston, and he said, Pastor, I want to thank you for the water, and I want to show you what I learned I could do with it. Now, there are no water hoses in this community, right? There's one hand pump. That's all we got. What just happened? We've never seen anything like this, right? So we're going, what is the deal? We're trying to talk Winston into doing it again. We call Winston the water fountain. And ladies, I should let you know, Winston is single. So I have his phone number. And Winston is a believer in Jesus, and he's very into good hygiene. He brushes his teeth often, which is important. He also has great abs, which, you know, my wife says goes a long way. You can see me right over here. I'm taking notes to describe to my wife what's going on. I'm like, babe, I just saw a guy spit water out of his mouth. So the part that gets really crazy and funny for us today is, so your pastor calls me and says, hey, Chris, you know, we've been working for a while so I could come and get to meet and encounter all of you. And said, the week I really want you to come, we're doing this series, Jesus, the Greatest Show on Earth. And we've had these kind of circus acts and some have worked, and we're trying to figure some of it out here. And he said, do you have anything you could do that's kind of like a circus act, right? So the funny part is when I got back, I started showing people these videos. Literally, nobody's seen anything like this. Like David Blaine saw it, literally called me on my cell phone. Wants to meet this guy. But I started taking it around, and a few doctors kind of explained to me what he is doing. And finally, this veterinarian that understands the physiology of it explained to me and said, basically, any of us can learn to do this. It's actually a learned skill. And so I went and visited him for a day, and I learned to do it. So I'm going to do it for you today. I'm just kidding. It's just a joke. These guys were nervous down here, though. They were seriously getting ready to move. It's today is one of those times and places where I hope you can look back later and go, you know what? I think I need to change some things. And I believe that that comes when we read the Bible well together. And when I say read the Bible well, I mean, I still got water on my mouth. When I say read the Bible well, I mean we read it humbly. We read it asking God to change us and to teach us. We don't just read it for information. Sometimes we get hung up reading the Bible going, I'm looking for a fact here. We start reading books like Genesis like it's a book of science. And it's a book that we can discover who we are. When we read the Bible well, we say, this is our story. It tells us where we come from. It tells us about our strengths and our weaknesses, our propensity to do the wrong thing and sometimes to do the right thing. And the best way I can explain it to you, I got to years ago do a book project with my dad and my grandfather. My grandfather pastored a church in Houston, in my city, for 60 years. We just lost him 2 weeks ago. And it was a really blessing. We got to a book called Faith of My Fathers, explore all the differences in our life and ministry. And along the way in discussions with my dad married into this family. His dad died in the Korean War. He was raised by his granny and pappy. And we didn't know much about that side of the family. In fact, I knew there were a few kind of secrets. Anybody's family have those that you never really talk about? And I needed the answer to one. My pappy was a one-armed truck driver. So the world should have more of them. Anybody know a one-armed truck driver? He drove a big dump truck, and in the days before power steering, huge steering wheel. I remember as a little kid, right? If you're a four-year-old boy, that's the coolest thing your pappy could ever do, right? And my pappy would drive this dump truck, and he'd sit on his porch, and I remember as a kid sitting in his lap and playing with his stub, you know, flapping it around, and I was kind of waiting for the words, right, when you're a kid to be able to say, because you want to be able to ask, like, Pappy, where's your arm? What happened? And I remember as a kid finally being old enough to articulate this thought and say, Pappy, what happened? And it got dead quiet, and it became clear nobody talks about this story. And my pappy wouldn't tell it. So as an adult, we finally go back and say, I want to hear the whole story. And so I don't know my pappy's name. We went to my aunt's sister. I'm sure she has a name too. We just call her Aunt Sister. And we went to Aunt Sister and said, Aunt Sister, do you know the whole story of what happened to Pappy? And as the story goes, my pappy was in a bar on Mid Lane in Houston, when that very close to where I live, what used to be the outskirts of the city. And he got in a fight with a man at the bar about the way this man was treating a woman. It's apparently a trait that's been passed down in our family. I have the same problem. Not long ago, I was driving, and my car took me to a place in Houston that really, for me, I didn't intend to go there. It's kind of a den of sin and iniquity for me. It's Poncho's. It's a Mexican buffet. And I got there, and it's very upstanding people that go to Poncho's, and this guy was smoking a cigarette over like a three-week-old baby, right? And the father part of me just kicks in. I'm like, man, you can't do that, you know? Stop. And he kind of looks at me and sizes me up and goes, who are you, you know, to tell me what to do? I'm just like, I'm just the guy here telling you it's not good for the baby. And it becomes clear really quickly that we're probably about to fight. And this is the awkward point of, do you go, hi, I'm Pastor Chris, you know, it's really, and he kind of looks at me, sizes me up, we have this stare off, and then he puts his cigarette out. I won, and I could have taken the guy too, by the way, so I was kind of looking forward to it. And you know, my pappy apparently has the same propensity. He didn't like the way this guy was speaking to this woman, and they get in a fight. My pappy whoops him and thinks the fight's over. This guy goes out to his car. He gets a shotgun. He comes back in, and he shoots my pappy's arm off, right? At this point, I just thought it was a train accident or something. I'm like, wow, Really, in a bar fight, my pappy loses his arm. Well, the story went on, but my pappy, with one arm severed, picks up this guy with his left arm, throws him against a brick wall, and kills him. We're going, wow, we had no idea, right? I struggled to even tell my wife, I didn't tell many people the story for a while. And in fact, the only time I would tell it, I'm an author, so when I'm negotiating a book deal with a publisher, they would kind of make an offer on a book, and I'd say, well, let me tell you about my pappy. We got a history in my family of killing people with one arm, and they would always make a better offer, and it seemed like a helpful story, but it just seemed like some strange story to me until I began to really put it together and realize this was my story, right? My pappy was the primary male role model for my dad for the first 19 years of his life. And he shaped and influenced my dad in more ways than I could ever imagine. And when, on that day in that bar, my pappy shut down. He didn't talk about much. He didn't talk about anything spiritual or emotional. He never told the story. That had to have completely influenced who my dad became, and no one has influenced me more than my dad. And I began to realize that my failure to come home and often speak to my wife or tell her a story or reveal what was going on that was rooted for me in this story of what happened at a bar on Mid Lane. You follow me? This is my story. When we read the Bible well, we begin to realize this is who we are. We don't just read it like I'm going to learn something, some information. This informs our identity, who we are, and our potential to do something really right or do something really, really wrong. And so today, I want to call you into that story in a way that says, I believe that we can be a people that are radically transformed, that God has made each of us in ways that are so unique and remarkable, with gifts that nobody else has to give. And that too often we are living not the story of the Bible that tells us, the story of the Bible tells us that our life makes sense when we give ourselves away. It seems like a paradox to the rest of the world. But what the scriptures tell us, the more we give, the more we find happiness and contentment. The world and the culture is telling us another story. They're telling us that we were created to consume, that the more we buy, the more we own, the more we possess, the happier we'll be, right? And that's why some of our impulses literally are to go, I'm having a bad day. I think I'll go to Target and buy something, right? It always makes me feel good. For about 30 minutes, you break up with a boyfriend, girl, some of you go straight to Target. Like, I'm just going to buy something and I'll medicate myself with things. And it lasts for about 30 minutes and you got to buy something else and buy something else. And you can look in our garages and see the evidence of it, right? That often we have a temptation to live into that story. The Christian narrative calls us to something different. It says the more you give, the more you serve, the happier you'll be. The more you'll find purpose and meaning in this life. And my prayer today is that each of us would have a moment we could pause and reflect and say, what story am I living into? One of my favorite scenes in all of film is a scene I'm going to show you today. It's a scene in the movie Walk the Line. The story of this guy, J.R. Cash, who is radically transformed in an encounter with a record producer. At this point in his life, he's an appliance salesman. His wife hates him. He hates his life. He hates his job. He's trying to become a gospel singer. And Sam Phillips, guy who discovered Elvis, if you're going to make music, this is the guy you wanted to connect with. J.R. Cash sets up this meeting, literally kind of stalks Sam Phillips, sets up this meeting to play music with him. And I'm praying you and I have a similar kind of experience to J.R. Cash in this clip. All right, J.R. Cash goes from being an appliance salesman trying to sing gospel music, imitating other people, singing about peace within and how he wanted to shout it, but his wife hated him, he hated his job, he hated his life. None of it was true. And ultimately, he becomes an artist that I love, my grandmother loves, my kids will probably love. Not because he's the greatest singer, greatest guitar player ever to live, just because he was a person that we became known as an artist to us as somebody that was telling the truth. He told stories that were real, that you could relate to, that were believable, right? And I think for many of us, we've spent much of our lives, too much of it, imitating people. It's by nature. We just began to, we do it at a young age. We began to look at how other people dress. We think we should dress that way. And what they drive, we should drive. The house they live in, we should live in. And we began to imitate rather than to discover our unique path and what we're made to do. I'm hoping today some of you, can you imagine if Sam Phillips had never said to J.R. Cash, I don't believe you? He'd be playing lousy music, had led a miserable life, and we would have missed out, right, on a great artist, a truth teller. I think the world potentially could miss out on you if someone like me doesn't take a moment. Someone like me that also had a similar path, and I had to just go, if you're going to be a pastor, it's a little bit of a weird thing, right? Because especially when I was growing up, there weren't pastors like your pastor to look to. That's a really cool guy that you'd want to hang out with. Like, if you were going to be a pastor, you needed to wear a polyester suit, gain a lot of weight, and talk in a really strange voice. And like, I didn't want to be that guy, right? It took me a while to figure out, like, I could just be me. And in fact, I would do my job better if I just be me. Broken, messed up me, trying to figure it out, but being captured by the love of Jesus along the way. That if I could experience that, that would be worthwhile. I believe that you are likely caught up in the same struggle, imitating rather than living into your true story. I recently did a talk at this TED conference, which they do amazing talks, and it's a lot of pressure. In fact, the only reason I got through is because there was a TED talk about how to give a good TED talk. So I pulled that up, and that helped a lot. And one of the things they tell you is to be very self-deprecating and tell a story that would be really embarrassing. And as a pastor, you're always doing that. So I thought, what am I really, really embarrassed of? And there's one thing that my family makes fun of me for relentlessly. And I can't stop doing it. It's a compulsive behavior. It doesn't quite have a name, and so I've finally tried to quantify it. It's something I am now naming and calling the Mockingbird Syndrome. So this is what I believe the Mockingbird Syndrome is. I have it. I'm embarrassed of it. I wish I didn't. But this Mockingbird Syndrome, I'm saying, is the tendency to very poorly mimic the sounds, accents, and inflection of the person one is addressing. So if this mimicry was not wholly unintentional, it would be utterly offensive and entirely reprehensible. I don't know why I do it, right? But when I go to the Japanese sushi place down the road from my house and the lady comes to my table, right? I say, could I have escalar, please? Like, and she looks at me in a way that, like, could you just speak English? I don't understand. This doesn't make sense. When I call technical support and the Indian guy answers, right? I start to talk like I'm Indian, right? I'm not. I don't have an Indian accent, but somehow I lose it. I have one friend from East Texas, and I think nobody should have more than one friend from East Texas. But when I talk to him on the phone, my wife knows that's who I'm talking. This is what they look like in East Texas, by the way. Love that guy. I just start to adopt some kind of Texas slang that I never had before. And my wife is like, I know who you're talking to on the phone. I believe that somewhere at our core, we have this thing that says, I will mimic people. I will try to imitate them. And what is maybe more difficult and has to be more thought out is to say, what does it look like to be a people that discover our own unique voice? That realize that we bring something to the world nobody else brings. And if we don't bring it, the world misses out on it. I don't know what your gift is. I can't tell you. You probably have many of them. Some of you are made to write poetry or write songs or to explore melodies, to write literature, to teach, to love kids, to bring hospitality, to make and bake and create great food. And I'm here to eat your food. I'm willing to serve you in that way. Whatever that gift is that you bring, that it's significant and it's you. It's not the gift that your neighbor has or that your sister has. It's not the one that your parents maybe expected you to bring and that you're trying to live into that place. It's what God made you to do. And that when we begin to live as those people, and I believe collectively, the greatest asset that Crossroads has is not this building. It's an amazing place, good coffee, get to come in here and find a seat. It's comfortable, good people. You get to be yourself. Can't beat it. But the greatest asset is not the building. It's not the CityLink building. It's the fact that all of you collectively have gifts that when you bring them to the world and to this community, it'll not just change Cincinnati. I believe it'll change the world. And so we look at a place like CityLink, and we look at the fact that Cincinnati ranks in the top three for poverty, and we just say as a church, we're not going to stand for that. And so when we see places that are broken, I believe as people of faith, we've been given unique goggles where everybody else looks and says, well, that's a problem. That's really bad. We look and go, well, God has a solution for that problem. We see a crack house, and where others say, oh, that's awful, it's a crack house, we see a playground. We say, you know what, we can buy that place, we can tear that thing down, we can have a playground there in a week, because we're those kind of people that believe God is changing the world. We see people that live in generational poverty, and we believe we can do job training. We believe we can tutor kids that they can get through school. We just say, God, lead us to that place, and collectively our gifts begin to make those things happen. In 1 Peter, we get a great account from one of the reasons I love. Peter was one of the disciples of Jesus, and he wrote a couple of the books here in the Bible. And one of the reasons I like to read them is because I relate to Peter a lot. Peter on one day with Jesus, he was just on. He could answer all the right questions and was doing the right things. And the next day, he'd just kind of be a goofball, you know? He'd get it wrong. In fact, one day, Jesus had to call him Satan, right? I mean, this is a pretty bad day. If Jesus calls you Satan, that's not just a really good day for you, right? But literally, Peter was chewing out Jesus. He was telling Jesus what to do. And Jesus is like, I'm Jesus, you're Peter, right? And we got to get this straightened out. And Peter got a little too cocky and thinking he knew the answers. And you know what? We do the same thing. It's part of why I really, we often come to God like, God, I know the plan. I'm going to do this, this, and this. And God is like, I made you. Would you mind checking in with me? I could fill you in about this a bit. And in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21, it calls us into the path that we are to imitate. We're not to imitate the way Jesus talks. In fact, he spoke in Aramaic. None of us know Aramaic. We're not to imitate his dress. What we are to imitate is to follow his path, the way that he lived, the way that he treated people. And in 1 Peter 2, it talks to us specifically about that. It says, for you were called to this kind of life. As Isaiah said, he did no wrong deed, and no evil word came from his mouth. That's Jesus. We often will fail in that. For some of us, we go, some evil words came from my mouth like this morning. Forgiveness is a really good thing. The liberating King suffered for us and left us his example so that we could follow in his steps. That's what he's the one we're supposed to follow. He's the one we're supposed to imitate. When he was verbally abused, he didn't return the abuse. We live in a world that says, if you come after me, I'll come back after you. In fact, many Christians still love to lean on the Old Testament and say, well, it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Well, Jesus came and he canceled that score. Jesus came and said, no, you know what? Turn the other cheek. Revenge belongs to God. It takes really strong people to allow others to come after you, to do wrong to you, and to forgive them. And you know what? If you're trying to get revenge, you're trying to go back, you're going to get dragged into the same hole. He says, when he was verbally abused, he didn't return the abuse. When he suffered, he didn't make threats to cause suffering in return. Instead, he trusted that all would be made right, would be put right by the one who is just when he judges. He ultimately said, God will be the one to make things right. And so I'm going to live my life and control only what I can control, what I do. And he took on our sins in his body when he died on the cross so that we, being dead to sin, that's the good news, that sin doesn't own us, our failures can't haunt us, that though we make mistakes, they've been taken on by Jesus and forgiven and made clean. That we can live for righteousness. Literally in the scriptures, one of the most misunderstood words in all the scriptures, mentioned more than 100 times in the New Testament alone, this word tzedek in the Greek, that literally, oftentimes you hear righteousness and people think morality or piety or just doing the right thing. Literally, it would be God taking what's broken in the world and making it whole again, making right what's broken. We are those broken people. The world is broken. He's called us to do the same. That through his wounds, as the scriptures say, through his wounds, you were healed. For there was a time when you were like sheep that wandered from the fold, but now you've returned to the shepherd and guardian of your lives. Peter's referencing briefly a story that Jesus told in Luke 15, a story about a shepherd who had 100 sheep, and he would leave the 99 sheep to go find the one sheep that had wandered off. And when he found that sheep, he would put the sheep on his shoulders, and he came back celebrating and having a party because he loved that sheep. We all know, every one of us, what it feels like to be the wandering sheep, the one who's kind of just veered off the path. That's why when you come to Crossroads, you're not going to find anybody that's really arrogant, like going, hey, I'm better than you, because we all know, every one of us, we've veered off the path. We've gotten really lost. And the great thing about our God, what we believe about Jesus, is that he comes to us in that time, in that place, and instead of scolding us, that many of us believe somehow that's what God's going to do, because maybe you've experienced that, we're really sorry for that if you have. But instead of scolding us, he welcomes us with loving arms. And I believe today, some of us have been wandering a path because we're trying to imitate somebody else, trying to live up to somebody else's expectations. We've forgotten that we are uniquely gifted, that God made us to bring something to this church and to the world. And I'm just going to pause as we close out and say a prayer for you, a prayer that you would discover those gifts and that you wouldn't be shy and bashful. You'd bring them in full force, full loving force to the world. And in that place, we would all benefit from those mutual gifts. Would you pray with me, or allow me to pray for you at least? God, I thank you for these brothers and sisters, men, women, and children, young people, that you have made, and you've gifted them so uniquely with gifts that are so multifaceted and diverse. We just look around this room and we realize, Lord, you didn't make us all the same. We don't look the same. We don't act the same. We have different gifts, and none are better than the others. In fact, you made us all so that when we come together, we would act in concert in a way that's beautiful and transforming. And we acknowledge, God, that sometimes we just hadn't been playing the right part. We've been trying to be somebody else, and we haven't had every instrument, every gift, every human playing in that concert. And so we just ask, God, that you would lead us to that place, that we'd find our fulfillment in sharing and giving who we are. And that along the way, we'd encounter your unconditional love, a love that celebrates even when we fail, that welcomes us back, and that we'd live a life that can share that with others. We pray this prayer together in your name, in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, we pray. Amen. God bless you, Crossroads. It's been a blessing to be with you.